Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready to ride? Around the block now, everyday scene, dope fiends and the cops round. At any traffic stop, we could be shot down, and in the courts it's just us. Justice is not fair.
Good evening, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Injust Us, the show that allows listeners to share stories of injustice, ask questions, and seek advice. Each week, we feature guests who are making a difference in the Black community and or changing the criminal justice system. My name is Melinda Robertson, and I am your host and a member of the WPGR All-Female Radio Network. I am the founder of Black Mothers for Justice, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit created to provide a safe space where mothers can talk freely about their hurt, pain, shame, and guilt without being judged. The mission is to bring mothers together and allow them an opportunity to speak their truth. On August 1st, 2020, Black Mothers for Justice, Inc. will be hosting its second virtual meeting for mothers of inmates. The first one was held July 3rd and was such a blessing to the mothers that we are now committed to hosting these virtual meetings monthly because these mothers are suffering in silence during the pandemic. They have been unable to visit their children, are going days, sometimes weeks, without hearing from them, and the fear of COVID-19 weighing heavy on their hearts. Black Mothers for Justice is committed to giving them something they have never had, a voice. Last but not least, on August 15, 2020, I will be hosting a virtual book signing party for the release of A Black Mother's Guide, How to Survive the Criminal Justice System. I wrote this book out of necessity because one in every three Black boys will go to prison in their lifetime, and 72% of Black children are raised by single mothers. You may pre-order your copy today at www.blackmothersforjustice.com. The Zoom login information will be provided in the weeks to come. Please mark your calendars accordingly. The National Action Network is one of the leading civil rights organizations in the nation with chapters throughout the United States. Founded in 1991 by Reverend Al Sharpton, National Action Network is within the spirit and tradition of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to promote a modern civil rights agenda that includes the fight for one standard of justice, decency, and equal opportunities for all people, regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, citizenship, criminal record, economic status, gender expression, or sexuality. On August 28, 2020, the National Action Network will be hosting the Get Your Knee Off Our Next Commitment March to the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. This march on Washington will be a day of action that will demonstrate our commitment to fighting for policing and criminal justice. Tonight's guest, Anise Jenkins, is a native Washingtonian and a graduate of Howard University's Department of Political Science and has a master's degree in business. She is the executive director of the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network and the recipient of numerous awards, including the Trailblazer Award by the Congress of Black Women and the 50 Most Influential of the Decade Award by the Washington Informer newspaper, to name a few. The D.C. chapter of the National Action Network supports D.C. statehood because D.C. residents lack basic citizenship rights. Statehood is not only the path to equal rights and full citizenship for residents of the District of Columbia, it is the unfinished chapter of the civil rights movement. Ms. Jenkins is also the executive director of Stand Up for Democracy in D.C. and committed to obtaining full democracy for all residents with equal rights under the U.S. Constitution and human rights consistent with international law and to promote good governance for the welfare of the people. D.C. residents pay the highest federal taxes in the country, yet have no voting representation in either the House or Senate. They lack control over their own local budget and local laws and cannot appoint or elect their local judges. Ms. Jenkins helped to produce and narrate parts of the documentary, The Road to D.C. Statehood Under Construction. The documentary serves both an educational and advocacy purpose about the still of issue of D.C. statehood. The documentary was funded by a grant from the Office of the Secretary of Washington, D.C. Please help me welcome Queen Anise Jenkins to the show. Hello, Anise, and welcome to Injust Us. Hello. Anise, are you there? I apologize for the technical difficulties. I don't know whether it has anything to do with the storm that's going on over here.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Ms. Robinson, I can hear you.
You hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, my gosh, I am so sorry. I don't know if it has anything to do with the storm that's going on over here, but I am having some major, major technical difficulties. I do apologize, okay?
Oh, it's okay. No problem. I am honored to be on your show tonight.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and redo the intro and then bring you in, okay? Good evening, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to Injust Us, the show that allows listeners to share stories of injustice, ask questions, and seek advice. Each week, we feature guests who are making a difference in the Black community and changing the criminal justice system. My name is Melinda Robertson, and I am your host and a member of the WPGR All-Female Radio Network. I am the founder of Black Mothers for Justice, Inc., a 501c3 nonprofit created to provide a safe space where mothers can talk freely about their hurt, pain, shame, and guilt without being judged. The mission is to bring Black mothers together and allow them an opportunity to speak their truth. On August 1st, 2020, Black Mothers for Justice will be hosting its second virtual meeting for mothers of inmates. The first one was held July 3rd and was such a blessing to the mothers that we are now committed to hosting these virtual meetings monthly because these mothers are suffering in silence during the pandemic. They have been unable to visit their children, are going days, sometimes weeks, without hearing from them, and the fear of COVID-19 weighing heavy on their hearts. Black Mothers for Justice is committed to giving them something they have never had, a voice. Last but not least, on August 15th, I will be hosting a virtual book signing party for the release of A Black Mother's Guide, How to Survive the Criminal Justice System. I wrote this book out of necessity because one in every three Black boys will go to prison in their lifetime, and 72% of Black children are raised by single mothers. You may pre-order your copy today at www.blackmothersforjustice.com. Please mark your calendars accordingly. The National Action Network is one of the leading civil rights organizations in the nation, with chapters throughout the United States. Founded in 1991 by Reverend Al Sharpton, National Action Network is within the spirit and tradition of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to promote a modern civil rights agenda that includes the fight for one standard of justice, decency, and equal opportunities for all people, regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, citizenship, criminal record, economic status, gender expression, or sexuality. On August 28th, the National Action Network will be hosting the Get Your Knee Off Our Next Commitment March to the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. This march on Washington will be a day of action that will demonstrate our commitment to fighting for policing, and criminal justice. Tonight's guest, Anise Jenkins, is a native Washingtonian and a graduate of Howard University Department of Political Science and has a master's degree in business. She is the executive director of the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network and the recipient of numerous awards, including the Trailblazer Award by the Congress of Black Women and the 50 Most Influential of the Decade Award by the Washington Informer newspaper, to name a few. The D.C. chapter of the National Action Network supports D.C. statehood because D.C. residents lack basic citizenship rights. Statehood is not only the path to equal rights and full citizenship for residents of the District of Columbia, it is the unfinished chapter of the civil rights movement. Ms. Jenkins is also the executive director of Stand Up for Democracy in D.C. and committed to obtaining full democracy for all residents with equal rights under the U.S. Constitution and human rights consistent with the international law and to promote good governance for the welfare of the people. D.C. residents pay the highest federal taxes in the country, yet have no voting representation in either the House or Senate. They lack control over their own local budget and local laws and cannot appoint or elect their local judges. Ms. Jenkins helped to produce and narrate parts of the documentary, The Road to D.C. Statehood Under Construction. The documentary serves both an educational and advocacy purpose about the still obscure issue of D.C. statehood. The documentary was funded by a grant from the Office of the Secretary of Washington, D.C. Please help me welcome Queen Anise Jenkins to the show. Hello, Anise, and welcome to NJSS.
Hello. Thank you so much. As I said, I'm so honored to be on your program. You're doing so many wonderful and important things for the Black family. I'm really honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, and we're honored to have you here. So let's get to it. At what age did you become this amazing activist that you are today, and why?
Well, I think I trace it back. I am of that age, of a certain age, so I have to trace it back to the fact that I was born August 28, 1949, which means I was born on the day of the original 1963 march. And I do remember seeing Martin Luther King on TV. I remember seeing all of the things that were happening during that time, Black people being hosed, Black people being beaten down, Black people being targeted. And I saw all of that, and they had an effect on my psychological well-being. And I have no doubt that that's where my desire for equality started. I have no doubt of that.
Wow. So your passion, you're passionate about being an activist. When you started it, were you in middle school, were you in high school, or this has always been a part of you, you know, the conscious social consciousness, just being aware of everything that was being done?
I think it's always been a part of me. I have always cared so much. I always kept updated. I always read the newspapers, the magazines. I always fought for justice. It's something that we have to do. We don't have a choice. It's something that is ingrained in you. You are compelled to do it. And, I mean, that's the way I feel. I'm compelled to do this work. I'm compelled to stand up for people. Our organization is called Stand Up for Democracy, Stand Against Justice. And we have to do this. We have no choice. As Black people, we can't lay back. We can't stand back. We just lost John Lewis and C.T. Vivian, who were heads of Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which Marion Barry was also. And he was sent from Mississippi to Washington, D.C. Marion Barry was sent from Mississippi to Washington, D.C. The movement is the desire to make D.C. residents true American citizens. We are not American citizens in Washington, D.C. We might live in the nation's capital, but we don't have the rights of citizenship that we should have because we are residents in the capital. We do not have voting representation in the House or the Senate. There is a clause called the District Clause in the United States Constitution that says the Congress shall have complete and total control over the District of Columbia's laws, over the District of Columbia in any way. President Trump sent the National Guard into the park, Lafayette Park, which is across from the White House, to stop a peaceful demonstration. He had his stormtroopers come in to that park, a peaceful demonstration, and disrupt it and make it look like people were rebelling. They were there to form their rights. They were there to fight the disgusting things that he had been doing to the city. And I'm very proud of them. I'm proud of Black Lives Matter. I'm proud of the young people who are fighting him. And I'm so proud to be part of this movement, part of the Free DC movement. I just would like to correct something that you said. I'm not the executive director. I am the chair of the DC Statehood Committee, which is part of the Greater DC National Action Network.
Okay. Thank you so much for clarifying that. Wow. So this has been ongoing for over 50 years, would you say, in terms of trying to make D.C. a state?
I would say the statehood movement has been going on for 50 years, but the D.C. became a state over 200, came the nation's capital over 200 years ago, and we've been fighting this demeaning situation for 200 years. This has everything to do with race. It has everything to do with something called the four twos, the fact that D.C., Walter Fauntleroy, our first delegate, said he looked right through the situation and he said, D.C. is too black, D.C. is too urban, D.C. is too liberal, and D.C. is too Democrat. That he was saying, looking at the situation, it's based on race. The reason that we are not a state, the reason that we don't have these rights, is based on you had a majority of the population in D.C. before the severe gentrification that's taking place now. You had a majority of the population of the District of Columbia, the capital, were black people in the 70%. So, I mean, that was the problem.
Right.
We had Southern congressmen trying to overtake D.C. They used to use Marion Barry as a whipping boy, and he wouldn't take it. I mean, it's based on race.
Wow. In all your years of activism, what's your most memorable moment?
Well, I would say one of my most memorable moments is being arrested in the gallery, the House gallery of the United States House of Representatives. When we shouted out in the gallery, that's where the visitors sit up above the Congress people. We shouted, D.C. votes no. We shouted because we didn't have a voice in that body. We didn't have anybody to vote for us. Our delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton, who is still in that position, has no vote in the House of Representatives. We could not take that anymore. We were angry, and we shouted out in the House gallery, D.C. votes no. And that was we were arrested for that, and that was one of the things that I remember so well. We took the tactics of the civil rights movement at that time, nonviolent direct action.
Wow. What year was that?
That was in the late 90s. Late 90s.
In the late 90s?
I haven't been arrested.
Okay.
Right, late 90s. I haven't been arrested for at least maybe, I would say, 15 years. I haven't been arrested for statehood for about 15 years. But we were compelled to do it, yes.
Right, right. And we need people committed. We need committed people like yourself.
We need.
Were you ever a member of the Black Panthers Party growing up?
No, no, I was not. I wasn't a member of the Black Panthers Party. I wish I could say yes. But I was not a member of the Black Panthers.
Did you know any of the original Black Panthers during that era?
Well, I went to Howard University, so Kwame Ture used to come, Stokely Carmichael used to come and speak to us, and we would sit on the steps of the school and listen to him speak about what we should do and how we should do it, and I did hear him. I think he's in my head now. Stokely Carmichael told us to go out and stand up and fight for what we knew were our rights.
Wow. Wow. That's history. That's a part of history. So, okay.
It really is.
Anise, you have been, yes, it really is. You have been a longtime advocate for statehood for the District of Columbia for many years now. Why is this so important to you personally?
Well, it's personally important to me because at one time, the Congress took over the local government of Washington, D.C. They named the body the Control Board, and it was put in place to control the people of D.C. We have had no rights at that time. As I said, there's a district clause that is part of the United States Constitution that says that the United States Congress can take over and control any and everything in the District of Columbia. Our laws, they can control our budget, which is raised out of our money, out of our pocket. The Congress does not give us any money to run the District of Columbia. That's our tax money. The Congress can control that, how we spend it. And that's really one thing that I would say is should be unconstitutional, should not be a part of the United States Constitution, where we don't
wow.
have any rights. No. No rights.
Wow. Why do you think Congress is so reluctant to make New D.C. a state?
Well, we just had a vote on the 26th of June. And all of the Congress people that voted for statehood were Democrats. It's been a time when some of the Democratic Party out of the South, out of North Carolina, out of South Carolina, would come up and harass us. But that has ended. But I think, as I said, a lot of it has to do with race. They don't want to see a black majority state in the United States of America. We would be the only black majority state that existed in the country.
Wow. But technically, D.C. isn't no longer majority black, though, right?
It's not. But at one time, it was about 70% black. And even at its rate that it is now, at 40%, we would exceed any state within the United States. Mississippi, the southern states, they're in the 30%. D.C. is about almost 50% black. So, you know, you reach a threshold where people say, we're not having that. We're not going to have a state with that many black people in control, especially the capital of the United States of America. I know it has a lot to do with race. I don't doubt it. This country has not come over that bridge to say that it is not racist, and it is. It has a lot to do with our racial balance. I have no doubt about that. Well, gentrification has definitely taken place within the District of Columbia, but we would still have, as I said, the largest percentage of black people as far as states go in the D.C.
Wow. So last month, the House Democrats approved a bill to admit Washington, D.C. as a state, marking the first time either Chamber of Congress has advanced a D.C. state measure. How significant was this?
That was the first step. Note I'm saying step. We haven't reached the goal yet, but that was very significant. Our next step that we have to take is to get it through the Senate. The Senate is dominated by Republicans, which means they're not going to vote for it. Came out on its platform when they had presidential elections that they were totally against D.C. statehood. They had that in their presidential platform. So what we're going to have to do is find a way to gain support from the Republican Party, which at this time does not appear possible because we have President Trump, who says he would not sign the bill even if the Senate passed it. And there's Mitch McConnell, who has already said he's against D.C. statehood. So this is the Republican Party that it brags about have being the party of Lincoln, the party of the man who released the slaves. I'm not going to say free, but released the slaves. And they are acting like stone cold racists. There's no other way to put it.
Right. It's so blatant. They don't even try to hide it today.
No.
It's just so
that's
in
right.
your face. Oh, wow. That's kind of disgusting. I don't know. So,
well, we're not going to get discouraged. We'll keep fighting.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You definitely can't stop fighting. You've come too far. You've come too far
That's
for too
right.
long than fighting this fight. And you have to see it come to fruition. How will D.C. becoming a state benefit the residents of the District of Columbia?
Well, at this time, D.C. military members are sent to fight in wars. They have no say-so where they go. They have no say-so on how D.C. residents have no say-so on how their hard-earned tax money, federal dollars, are spent. We have no say-so in how things are run in our own city. That is ridiculous. It's insulting. It's undemocratic. It makes this country a joke. When you go, we had some members of our organization go to the Organization of American States, and the Organization of American States said very bluntly that the United States is in violation of our human and civil rights. That's on an international scale. This country was judged to be violating its own supposed principles, which means that it is a disgrace internationally.
Wow.
I really thank you for letting me get this out. A lot of people are unaware of our situation in D.C. They're unaware of the fight for statehood. They're unaware of how we are treated and how we live. It's like being on a plantation, basically.
Well, and see, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show so that you can kind of inform the people that don't really know the significance of making it a state. That's why we wanted to have you on the show so that you could, you know, inform the people because knowledge is power, and then it'll give them a better understanding and hopefully get the voters out there this November and, you know, make a change because we have to stand up.
That's right. That's right.
So, speaking of standing up, what is Stand Up for Democracy and its mission?
Stand Up for Democracy was formed in 1997, about 6 years after National Action Network was established. It was established to fight for D.C. statehood. It was established at that time, a lot of people were not talking about statehood. They thought it was not like a dream. They thought it was like Martin Luther King's dream. You know, it's not going to happen. But we're close. We are very close. Stand Up for Democracy fight for D.C. statehood. We educate. We go out into the community. We show our documentary that we have, and we educate people on the need for statehood. You know, a lot of people say, well, why should you care about statehood? So what's about statehood? What's so important about it? It determines how you live your life. It determines everything about your form of life. It's very important. Stand up for democracy, or we call ourselves Free D.C. after the Marion Barry movement came into existence to fight the control board, which took over local government in D.C. And we're still standing. We're still saying, Free D.C. now.
Wow. And you said they were established when, in 19, what did you say?
97, when the control board took over.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. So 20-plus years.
Yes.
Wow.
We've been out there over 20 years fighting, and
wow.
We are 501c3, as you said you are.
Mm-hmm. How can people join the movement?
Well, they can join the movement by contacting Greater DC National Action Network. They can go to dcman.org, or they can contact freedc.org. We are strongly supported by the Reverend Al Sharpton because he is a fighter for civil rights. And that's what Stand Up for Democracy, Free D.C. is fighting for, civil rights. At this time, the president, because we lack control over our own police department, can federalize the police department and have them run like they did in Lafayette Park, through Lafayette Park, doing what they want to do, cracking heads, whatever this president tells them to do. It's ridiculous. You know, we can't live that way. We can't live like that.
Yeah, because he is definitely making a mockery out of the country.
That's right. That's right.
Yes, it is just so sad that so many people, it is embarrassing. And it's just really unfortunate because racism is just so in your face today. And it's so blatant. And I believe that the administration that's in office has much to do with it, much to do with where we are today, with today's climate. It's really instigated it in many, many ways.
Yeah, he's made it acceptable to be a racist. I just put it like that.
Yes.
Used to be people would hide that, but they wouldn't go out and do what they're doing now.
Exactly, exactly. So the National Action Network was founded by Reverend Al Sharpton, and their headquarters in New York City. How long has the D.C. chapter been in existence?
The D.C. chapter was founded several years ago. I'm sure it's been at least 10 years ago. And it's very active in the D.C. community. They do confront police brutality, as Reverend Sharpton initiated the fighting police brutality. And it's been in existence for a while. I've been a member for a while. I've been a member for at least 10 years of the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network. And very proud to be so.
Good for you. What are the requirements for becoming a member of the D.C. chapter?
To become a member of the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network, you can go online, and it's a $25 per year fee to become membership fee to become a member of the National Greater D.C. Action Network. And you just have to come with the passion for civil rights, for equal rights, a passion to keep the police from attacking and killing people. You know, we have to be really committed and sincere about our membership and the membership to this organization. If you know, it's called the National Action Network. That means we take action.
Yeah.
We don't just sit around and talk about it. We take action.
Exactly. In what instances should residents of D.C. contact the national, you know, the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network? Like, what instances should they contact you guys? Like, if they were involved in a police brutality or this, what exactly, when should they contact you guys?
I would say if you are, I have some examples. The PG County chapter contacted the National Action Network. This man was a police officer, and he noticed discriminatory practices within that police department. And he came and approached Nia 2X, who is the current president of the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network. And we attended some of the rallies that they had to protect the police from discrimination and from ill treatment they were suffering. We were out there at the rally. We were out there when they went to court. And that is an excellent time to approach the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network. When you see an injustice going on, when you see things that are not right and you want to take action, come to the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network, and we will get involved in your issue.
Oh, that's nice to know. How active has the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network been with the Black Lives Matter protest?
Well, I know I have gone down as an individual to participate in some of those protests. And we really admire them. They are carrying on the work of the Reverend Al Sharpton. We really support them in many ways. And they are the new, I really think they're the new effort of the civil rights, because these are young people. They're fearless. They come out and say what they want. And we will join them in their fight. And we want them to join us in our fight. We can be powerful together, very powerful.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm so proud of our young people. I am so proud of our young people. They have been consistent. They have been being very vocal. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
I do too.
I'm also a woman of a certain age, so I'm unable to really be like on the front lines per se. But I'm just so proud of them and everything that they're doing and what they're standing, you know, what they're standing for. And it's time for us to pass the baton to them. And I'm just so proud of them because they are definitely being impactful and insightful. And just listening to some of their speeches and stuff, it's very encouraging, I would to say. It's very encouraging because society tries to make it seem like our young black children are a lost cause. And it does my heart so much good and joy to see so many of them out there and fighting for the cause and being vocal and peaceful, but still having their voices heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in awe of what God is doing and everything that's going on in today's climate.
Believe that they are carrying on what John Lewis and C.T. Vivian of the 60s did. They are carrying that on. We just have to remember that at one time, John Lewis and the 95-year-old C.T. Vivian, they joined the movement where they were very young. They were in their teens. And that's what these young people are doing.
Yes, I think he was 19 in that speech or something. Like one
that's
of his speeches I saw, I think he was 19. And I am so honored because I had the honor of meeting John Lewis and taking a picture with him about 5 years ago. And it just I happened to be at a barber shop in Clinton, and he came in and he actually spoke to everyone, and he was so kind-hearted and he was just so personable. And I will always cherish and remember that moment in time because I knew that he was a civil rights icon, and I just couldn't believe it when he was brought in for a haircut. And oh my God, just hearing him speak about his journey, and he talked to some of the young people, and it was just amazing. He was an awesome individual, and he will definitely be truly missed. And I believe, you know, I saw him the last time we saw him on TV, well, I did anyway, was when he was at the Black Lives Matter
Plaza.
Yeah. Did you see that?
I saw a picture in the newspaper. I did not know that he had gone down there that day. But our mayor stood up, and she painted the whole two or three blocks of the street spelling out Black Lives Matter, and he was there with her.
Yes, that's what I saw. Yes, I saw that, and that just meant everything. And I was just so grateful that he actually lived to see that moment in time.
That's right.
You know, you saw him being teary-eyed. He was teary-eyed seeing it. You know,
I did meet him though. And he was very humble. He didn't walk around like an icon, as you said. And he was very friendly to people. He would just invite you into his office, and in his office was covered with photos from the history that he lived. It was wonderful.
Wow. Is he still married? Is his wife living? Do you know any of that?
No, his wife died, I believe, a couple of years ago before he died.
Okay.
Yes, but he has a son. I think he has one son.
Oh, okay. Well, his legacy will definitely live on, and I'm just so thankful that he had God allowed him 80 years on this service, on this side, and definitely job well done. Definitely job well done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You couldn't ask for any more. He almost died.
No,
on
not at all.
And he kept going. He kept going. He did not stop.
Yes. Such an inspiration. Such an inspiration. How involved is the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network in the preparation of next month's March on Washington?
Well, we are getting together and making plans to be there. I did call the New York office and got more information, but it's going to start at Lincoln Memorial and end up at the Dr. Martin Luther King Memorial. So it will be marching. It will be going to the right places that represent true citizenship rights. Martin Luther King and Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. We are really excited about this.
So it's going to start at the Lincoln Memorial.
I believe so. I believe that's what it said on the website. You can go to the website and sign up and register for the march.
Okay.
NationalActionNetwork.org.
Just question, is the D.C. chapter of the National Action Network seeking volunteers for the march, or you guys aren't involved to that extent? Would that be if they wanted to volunteer, they should contact the headquarters in New York?
I think at this point New York is basically running it. But I can give you a number where you can call the local chapter of the D.C. office. It's 202-819-7134. That's the local chapter of the National Action Network.
Okay.
You want me to read? I can repeat it. 202.
No, okay. I have 202-819-7134.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And they
okay,
could
yeah,
ask
I'll,
if
I'll...
they are looking for a volunteer.
Okay. Anise, do you have any information that you would like to share with the audience about upcoming events or what you guys are working on, the website, anything like that that you would like to share before we wrap up?
Yes. Well, our statehood website is www.freedc.org. That's our statehood website. And as I said, National Action Network, NAN.org, is the website for the New York chapter of National Action Network. And we also have a Facebook for the local chapter. It's DC NAN DMV. DC NAN DMV. And we would really love for volunteers to contact. We need you. These are national issues that need to be addressed. Don't be afraid. Get involved. You're going to live a beautiful life. An activist life is a wonderful, blessed life. You're helping people to survive and helping people to live their best life.
Yes, and you definitely can't go wrong with that. Early on in the interview, you mentioned another icon that will always be the mayor for life, the one and only Marion Barry. Do you have a memorable moment with him that you can share with the audience?
I would say that my most memorable memory with him is when he came out with his book, which I can't remember the name of it, I'm sorry. But I just came up to him and he signed my book very, very nicely. He wasn't somebody who was standoffish. He was for the people. He was of the people. And he was a wonderful man. They mistreated Marion Barry. They didn't understand that he was in that position to free his people. As I said, he was sent up here from Mississippi, from a small town in Mississippi, from the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee to start the Free DC movement. And he did a wonderful job against a lot of opposition.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. All his life, but he was definitely for the people. I remember when he started the Summer Youth Program, and he was just adamant about every young person was able to get a job. There were no limitations. If you showed up, you got a job. You know, I just remember the senior citizen places that he made sure were available to the seniors in the District of Columbia. We don't have that type of loyalty today. A lot of the things that he started, unfortunately, are no longer here. Is that accurate? Would you say that? Would you agree with that?
Not accurate statement. We have used some of the youth from the D.C. I think it has now been named the Marion Barry Youth Employment Service. It still exists. We still are able to hire summer youth to work for nonprofit organizations, for whatever they're interested in. These are places that young people can get work experience, that young people can, you know, it's part of our culture. Even the treatment of seniors is part of DC culture. We look out for senior citizens, which I guess I'm looking out for myself in a way. But we are looking out for
I'm a senior as well.
All right. To make sure that they are living a good life. And that was part of Marion Barry. That was part of what he did. I mean, how could you have a politician who does not know that you have to look out for the youth and for the aged? You have to look out for both ends of life. And you will be loved. Marion Barry was loved by the people.
Absolutely. He has been and will be forever known as the mayor for life in D.C.
That's right.
And with today's climate, and like you said, the United States is perceived as a joke right now with this current administration. And unfortunately, when all that stuff was going on with Marion Barry, people tried to discredit the District of Columbia, saying who he was. And I'm like, you don't know who he is and the difference and the impact that he has made in the nation's capital. You know, the nation's capital. I've had many arguments defending the Honorable Marion Barry. And I will continue to speak about the legacy that man left.
And be confident in that. You are defending somebody who deserves all of that and more. He was a civil rights worker.
Yes, absolutely. And his legacy will live on forever and ever, and especially the people like me and you that have had personal experiences and stuff like that. I just remember the commitment and the dedication that he had to the people of the District of Columbia. And I was working at a law firm when he came from prison and he was running there again. And I was working at this law firm, and I had a button because I'm a member of Union Temple Baptist Church, and Reverend Willie Wilson he was instrumental in the mayor, his campaign and everything. So I had a button that said I'm voting for Marion Barry, and one of the partners at the firm, a Jewish guy, he says, you know, I've always thought that you were a pretty intelligent woman, Melinda, but that button that you have on, I'm really baffled by that button that you. How can you vote for somebody that he was just caught on, national TV? And I said, with all due respect, that is my brother.
That's right.
First and foremost, that is my brother, and whatever he is doing at 11 or 12 o'clock at nighttime, that is his business.
That's right. You cannot look at that video that they ran 24/7 so that everybody can see it. You can't look at that and not see entrapment. That's what they did.
Right,
set him up.
Right, and like I told him, I said, as long as I come in here from 9 to 5 every day, you could care less what I'm doing after midnight. Right or wrong, you know what I mean? I say he has never been questioned about running the District of Columbia. He has never been embezzling money or anything, you know what
I mean? That's right.
I spoke, girl. I spoke on that brother's behalf. Like, no, you're not. I will not bow down.
No.
Well, Queen Anise, thank you so much for being on
thank
the show
you.
Tonight. It has definitely been an honor and a pleasure having you on tonight's show.
I have been really privileged to talk to you, and I can see we are of like mind and like experience, and it's been fantastic to talk to you. You are a true queen helping people get the word out. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being a part of this show. That concludes tonight's show. Thank you so much. Hopefully, we're going to be able to get this record. I will be able to get a recording to you from tonight's show, okay? So you take care and God bless.
God bless you.
Thank you. You're welcome. The D.C. chapter of the National Action Network is a community-based organization that is making a difference in the community. I pray their efforts to make D.C. a state will be successful, and I commend people like Queen Anise Jenkins for the commitment to making it happen. If you have a story of injustice you would like to share or would like to recommend a topic for discussion on a future show, please DM me. I am Author Melinda Robertson across all social media platforms. Next week's guest will be exoneree Derek Hamilton, a brother who spent 23 years in prison for a murder he didn't commit and taught himself law, becoming a jailhouse lawyer in the process. His story of a redemption is incredible. Thanks for tuning in tonight, and we will be back at it again next Tuesday night from 8 to 9. Stay safe and be blessed. Peace.